Picture a 26-year-old tech worker sitting in a Hawaiian office, watching in real time as his government vacuums up the private communications of millions of innocent people. Edward Snowden faced a choice that summer of 2012: stay silent and complicit, or risk everything to expose the truth. He chose the latter, but not before carefully considering where to take his evidence. The New York Times? They previously sat on explosive national security stories after consulting with officials. The Washington Post? When they finally published some of Snowden's documents, they admitted to clearing it with the government first and only printed 4 of the 41 slides he'd provided. This wasn't journalism. It was stenography with a permission slip. Snowden's decision to bypass establishment media and reach out to filmmaker Laura Poitras and blogger Glenn Greenwald marked a watershed moment. Traditional gatekeepers had failed so spectacularly that a whistleblower risking life imprisonment trusted independent outsiders more than Pulitzer-winning institutions. Intelligence agencies undermining elected governments sounds like conspiracy theory material until you examine the historical record. In 1960s Britain, roughly 30 MI5 officers actively plotted against Prime Minister Harold Wilson, convinced, without evidence, he was a Soviet spy. This wasn't passive suspicion. It was an organized campaign involving military leaders and media barons. General Sir Walter Walker assembled a private army, while Lord Mountbatten reportedly stood ready to have the Queen request military intervention during manufactured breakdowns in law and order. The media's role proved essential to this shadow coup. Mountbatten cultivated journalists like Chapman Pincher, inviting him to his palatial estate for exclusive access. Pincher specialized in flattering intelligence agencies, becoming what historian E.P. Thompson brilliantly described as a kind of official urinal where high officials of MI5 and MI6 stand side by side, patiently leaking. Meanwhile, Clockwork Orange, a black propaganda operation, planted forged documents through journalists suggesting labor ministers were communists or IRA sympathizers. Australia experienced similar interference when Prime Minister Gough Whitlam questioned U.S. military bases on Australian soil. Rupert Murdoch's newspapers turned viciously against him, declaring the country was spinning out of control. When Whitlam threatened to close the Pine Gap surveillance facility, former CIA officer Victor Marchetti later admitted it caused apoplexy in the White House. On November 11, 1975, Governor General Sir John Kerr, who had CIA connections, dismissed the elected government. The internet's origin story isn't a libertarian fairy tale. It emerged from ARPANET, a Defense Department project warning users it was illegal to use the ARPANET for anything which is not in direct support of government business. Stanford University, the revolution's epicenter, maintained deep military-industrial ties. Dave Packard and Bill Hewlett's garage oscillators for Disney's Fantasia quickly pivoted to counter-radar technology and artillery fuses. When Packard became Nixon's deputy defense secretary, he rewrote laws giving presidents unprecedented power to deploy troops against civilians. By the late 1990s, Stanford PhD students Larry Page and Sergey Brin developed a search engine treating the internet as a democracy, ranking sites by popularity. The idealistic veneer cracked as Google embraced advertising and user profiling eerily similar to intelligence methods. The CIA's investment arm, InQtel, funded keyhole satellite imagery before selling it to Google as Google Earth. Meanwhile, traditional journalism faced existential crisis. In 2004, Eric Beecher warned Fairfax Holdings that classifieds would migrate online. Director Roger Corbett dismissed this by dropping a Saturday newspaper bulging with ads onto the boardroom table. 5 years later, as chairman, he presided over Fairfax losing 2/3 of its value and 1,900 staff. Google and Facebook became powerful gatekeepers, harvesting reader data preferences, politics, behaviors, creating a solid stream of silver through targeted advertising that newspapers could never match. The News of the World's phone hacking scandal revealed how circulation desperation drove tabloids into criminality. In 2005, royal reporter Clive Goodman and private investigator Glenn Mulcair hacked royal staff voicemails over 600 times. editor Andy Coulson resigned, only to become Prime Minister Cameron's media advisor, a decision Cameron would bitterly regret. Editor Rebecca Brooks specialized in sensationalist provocations, publishing lists of convicted pedophiles that sparked vigilante attacks, including vandalism of a pediatrician's home by people who confused pediatrician with pedophile. In 2008, the paper orchestrated an elaborate sting against Max Mosley, hiring prostitutes and secretly filming him, falsely claiming it was a Nazi orgy. Mosley successfully sued, exposing their fabrications. Guardian journalist Nick Davies revealed News International had paid over $1 million to settle cases that would expose criminal methods. In July 2011, Davies revealed they'd hacked murdered schoolgirl Millie Dowler's phone and families of soldiers killed in Afghanistan. The 168-year-old newspaper shut down. But the real scandal wasn't just tabloid excess. It was how easily journalists could be prosecuted under laws designed for spies. The FBI argued Fox News reporter James Rosen had acted much like an intelligence officer when soliciting information, stripping First Amendment protection. Electronic surveillance had made investigative journalism dangerous. Every communication could be tracked and weaponized. In 1999, Rafid Ahmed Al-Janabi fled Iraq for Germany, fabricating stories about mobile biological weapons labs to secure asylum. Despite his reputation as a liar, German intelligence found his detailed descriptions credible, codenamed him Curveball, and sent 95 reports to American agencies. His information perfectly matched existing CIA beliefs about Iraqi WMDs, a dangerous confirmation bias neoconservatives exploited after 9/11. In December 2001, Kurdish engineer Adnan Ihsan Saeed al-Haideri claimed knowledge of 20 secret WMD sites. A CIA polygraph expert determined he was a fabricator at best and probably a liar, but the White House ignored this. The Rendon Group, a PR firm specializing in perception management, arranged journalist Paul Moran to interview al-Haideri, broadcasting the exclusive globally. New York Times reporter Judith Miller became a key conduit, writing unattributed claims about Hussein's nuclear ambitions. Meanwhile, NSA analyst David Rosenberg revealed that despite satellites focusing on Iraq for a decade, they found no evidence of WMDs threatening the U.S. The intelligence existed, the truth was available, but the war machine wanted a different story, and compliant journalists provided it. In 2006, Julian Assange conceived WikiLeaks as scientific journalism, publishing stories with original documents for verification. Unlike intelligence agencies serving nations, WikiLeaks aimed to become the most powerful intelligence agency on Earth, open-sourced and democratic, serving only truth. When Chelsea Manning uploaded classified documents in 2010, Assange premiered Collateral Murder, footage of U.S. Apache helicopters killing Reuters journalists and wounding children in Baghdad. Guardian journalist Nick Davies arranged collaboration between WikiLeaks, The Guardian, Der Spiegel, and The New York Times. The relationship was strained. NYT's Eric Schmidt described Assange as disheveled, like a bag lady, while strategically insisting WikiLeaks was merely a source, not a media partner. Following major publications, Assange faced Swedish legal troubles under suspicious circumstances. Though Sweden's chief prosecutor initially found no rape case, it was mysteriously reopened as the U.S. urged allies to file criminal charges. 10 days before Cablegate's publication, an Interpol red alert was issued. U.S. officials called him a high-tech terrorist, with some suggesting execution. Assange sought asylum in Ecuador's London embassy, trapped for 7 years, a living example of transparency threatening power. Edward Snowden fled to Hong Kong on May 20, 2013, after his attempts to reach Glenn Greenwald nearly failed when the journalist ignored encrypted messages. Snowden contacted Laura Poitras, who shared documents with Washington Post reporter Barton Gellman before finally connecting with Greenwald. When Guardian US notified the NSA about publishing, officials responded with silence, then threats. The story broke at 5:40 p.m., revealing the NSA collected millions of Verizon customers' phone records daily. 24 hours later, the Washington Post exposed PRISM, granting the NSA direct access to major tech companies' data. Snowden's decision stemmed from witnessing CIA operatives entrap a Swiss banker through a staged drunk driving incident and watching director James Clapper lie under oath about collecting Americans' data. After the 2015 Charlie Hebdo attacks, governments exploited the tragedy to expand surveillance. The UK revived its Snoopers Charter, while Australia justified metadata retention. Ironically, intelligence agencies had already monitored both perpetrators, but dropped surveillance due to other priorities, not inadequate laws. The internet promised democratized information, but created history's most sophisticated surveillance apparatus. When journalism's biggest story, mass surveillance of entire populations, had to be smuggled past institutions meant to hold power accountable, something fundamental broke. Outsiders like Greenwald, Snowden, Manning, and Assange shattered comfortable containments, and governments responded by redefining journalism as espionage. What kind of society do we want? One where truth-tellers are hunted like criminals, or one where power answers to the people? The choice is made every time we demand accountability, support independent journalism, and refuse to accept that secrecy equals security. Your privacy isn't just personal, it's political. Defend it like democracy depends on it, because it does.